Hi, everybody. I'm going to apologize right off the bat because for whatever reason over about the last hour, there have been so many sirens outside or people honking their horns. So if you hear a lot of horn honking, it's because I'm on 14th Street in Manhattan and the traffic is really bad right now. So I apologize in advance for bringing the city into your room there. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with me, if I've seen you at the conferences. But I've been teaching computers for now almost 25 years, and primarily to people my age or older. And tonight what I want to talk about, we're going to try to do a little screen sharing here and see if we can do this successfully. So that's the cover of the book that some of you are familiar with. Tonight what we want to talk about is social networking. So before I get started, I just want to do a little take a temperature in the room. Jim, I'm going to ask you to just tell me a percentage of the people in the room. How many people in the room, by a show of hands, are on Facebook? So what percentage in the room would you say?
Well, at least half, maybe
two-thirds. Half? How many people in the room are on Twitter?
Twitter.
Twitter?
About a fourth.
Okay. How many people use Instagram?
There you go, one.
Good. And how many people in the room think it's a bunch of hooey?
Yeah. Yeah, about a third.
A fair number. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. I'm going to walk you through. For those of you that are already using Facebook, bear with me as I sort of introduce it. I do want to talk about Twitter. I want to talk about Instagram, a little bit about LinkedIn, and then I want to talk about sort of the ramifications of what's been happening with the conveyance of information without a filter. But first, the slide that is my favorite slide about this topic is, on the internet you can be anything you want. It's strange that so many people choose to be stupid. The problem, it happens to all of us. But I think we need to first break down this demographic. People under the age of 25 or 20, doctors will tell you that their frontal lobe is not fully developed. They're not quite where they want to be. So I want to be sure that when you compare behavior on social networking, you're not comparing yourself to what a 13-year-old does on social networking, because a 13-year-old, their frontal lobe isn't so fully developed. Your frontal lobe is fully developed, and you can take command of social networking to use it for the best benefit for you, to make sure that you're not doing anything foolish, but to really take advantage of all the good parts about it. And there are very good parts about social networking. Somebody asked me recently, like, why would I ever get onto Facebook? And I'll tell you that there are two examples in my personal life that really were effective. And now with this Hurricane Florence coming in, it's, you know, it sort of speaks to it. When Hurricane Sandy hit, my mother lived in Connecticut, and she lost her electricity, and Mom was disabled. And I had my iPad with me, and I had a little solar battery, so I was actually able to stay connected even though we didn't have electricity. And I got onto Facebook, and I put a notice up for all the friends that I had in Connecticut nearby. I said, if you see the CLNP truck, let me know. And within minutes, people started telling me where these guys were working on the lines, and I jumped on my bicycle and rode over to where they were and explained to them that my mom was disabled and that as soon as they could work on the lines near our house, the better, as far as I was concerned, and thanked them very much. And it was only a couple of hours later that my mom got her electricity, and I cannot help but feel that that happened because I was able to figure out where these guys were and to ask them to pay attention because she was disabled. Another time that, this is not a personal story of mine, but it was a story that I saw happen on Facebook. It unfolded on Facebook that a woman put up a post that she had lost her dog. And how that had happened was that she and her son were in a car accident with the dog in the car. And the ambulance came and took her son, who was disabled, so it was a special dog for him, took them to the hospital, and the dog disappeared. And so she put up a post on Facebook with a picture of the dog saying, if anybody sees the dog, let us know. Unbeknownst to her, somebody forwarded that picture to a Facebook page about lost pets, which increased the number of people that saw that posting. And before you knew it, these two teenage girls who saw it on their phones decided to see if they could track down where the dog was based on where the accident was, and all of a sudden the post came up, the dog had actually run out of the car and his leash had gotten caught on a fence, but these girls did all of this because they saw it on Facebook, and they were able to communicate it to a lot of people to ultimately get the woman who lost her dog to find out where her dog was. So there are ways to use this kind of amazing communication to good, as opposed to bad or just to waste people's time. And that's what I think is most interesting. I know my mother, when she was on Facebook, she would say to me, "Don't your friends have jobs? They seem like they're on Facebook all the time." Because people are on Facebook all the time doesn't mean that you have to be. I know for some people the big turnoff is, I don't want to spend my time on Facebook. And you can absolutely take advantage of what it has to offer without spending all of your time on it, even though it seems like a lot of people spend an inordinate amount of time on Facebook. And I find it to be kind of disconcerting to see how much time they're spending, but that's their life. This is your life. And you're going to control your social media. So let's walk through some slides here. If you haven't joined Facebook, it's a website that you can go to. It's just facebook.com. In order for you to join, you're going to have to establish with them, giving them an email address and a password for Facebook. And in the book, there's a whole chapter about how to create different passwords without having 1,000 passwords for different websites that you're visiting. So you'll have to establish a password with Facebook so only you can access your account. Facebook, I think it's 85% of people that access Facebook actually do it from their smartphone and not from the computer. So you can access Facebook from the computer, you can do it from a tablet, or you can do it from your smartphone. And I think that's why people are, yeah. Yeah?
Your slides are not full screen. Can you change your slide presentation to full screen?
Oh, you know what? But are they big enough for you to see? Because I actually like having the little thing on the side, if that's okay.
Right.
Is that okay?
We'll have to do then.
No, that's all right. Is it that they're too small?
Yeah, it could be bigger.
Oh, well, all right. Let's change that. Hold on. That's not big enough, is it?
Oh, that's better. That's fine. That's good.
Okay. There's nothing on the bottom that you're missing, so that's okay. Here, I'll scooch this up a little bit. Better?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Sorry about that. So, this page illustrates different groups that I belong to on Facebook, and I think it's important for you to know. The nature of Facebook is, and this is another thing that I think for people my age and older, this is an irritating use of a word that we know very differently in our life. On Facebook, if you choose to share something with somebody, they are suddenly called your friend. So your friend can see what you see, and you can see what they put up. I know a lot of people on Facebook that have a lot of friends on Facebook that they've never met before. So the word friend, you have to just sort of release yourself from what you used to think that word meant. And on Facebook, it means somebody that you're allowing to see what you put on Facebook, and they in turn are letting you see what they put on Facebook. That's what a friend is. So I don't have anybody that I am friends with on Facebook that I don't know. But there are many, many people that have chosen to say yes to letting somebody see their information even though they don't know them. That is purely up to you. You could have a Facebook page, a Facebook identity, and never have any friends on Facebook. You could just choose to join organizations on Facebook or like pages of things that you have an interest in, because Facebook has people sharing what I want to share. I could share a recipe on Facebook, a website I want to show you, a photograph. But if you decide to like an organization, and I don't know whether your computer group has a Facebook page, but if they do, I'm sure that they're sharing helpful information and reminding people of when the meetings are happening or that there's an election at this meeting. Your local library has a Facebook page, and they're going to let you know what speakers are coming in and if their hours change due to a storm. So this page that I'm showing you here is just an example of some different kinds of interests that you could have on Facebook. If you like antique cars, I'm sure there's a Facebook page or many of them that would give you information about that. In this case, like this one that says, When I Am With Dad, it's a friend of mine who writes children's books, and that's one of the children's books that he wrote. And so I can go onto his page, and I can see how his book is doing or what stories he's chosen to share. So I just want to have you sort of broaden your idea of Facebook, if you're not on it yet, that you could choose to have it be that you're interacting with what you're sharing and you're seeing individuals sharing, or it could be that you go onto Facebook to look at your local restaurant. And when they do their specials that day, they're going to put them on Facebook. Or sometimes there are discounts that you see on Facebook that you don't see other places. So it's worth thinking about whether Facebook is going to be an avenue for you to deal with things on a personal level or an avenue for you to deal with interests of yours and not to deal with it on a personal level or a little bit of both. So as I said before, if you don't have a Facebook page, you're going to have to sign up for one. And this is sort of similar. I think this is slightly out of date, this screen. But basically, this is where you would go to sign up. You have to give them some demographic information, but you don't have to give them very much. They're interested in what your age is, but they're not interested in posting what your age is. So you don't have to actually put your age in. What is important with Facebook is the basis of Facebook is that you are an actual person, and you give them your true name, or you give them your name with your maiden name. But if Facebook is not structured, that there's anonymity, and that's very important. Twitter, which we'll talk about later, you can make up any name you want to. The backbone of Facebook, in theory, is that people are who they say they are. Now, obviously, you've read in the news that there's a lot that they're doing with trying to confront and cull out people who've created fake identities. And I get approached at least every week, if not almost every day, with somebody asking to be my friend on Facebook. And not only do I not know them, but I can tell when I look at their Facebook information that they're not actually a real person. So that's a problem that Facebook is trying to handle. And I say this not to turn you off of Facebook, but in fact to try to get you to be more discriminating. Even if you kind of have an open feeling about, sure, I'll let anybody see what I'm putting on Facebook, but to really look and see who the people are that are asking to be your friends and be sure to the best of your ability that you can tell that it's a real person. In my case, I will tell you how I can usually distinguish that it's not somebody I know. First, I'm looking at the picture, obviously, and they're not somebody I know, but to tell that they're not a real person, they'll have the same photograph of their face looking a certain way with four different backgrounds. And I'm like, nobody has the exact same picture but with four different backgrounds. So they're just creating an image. So it's just a cautionary tale for you to be sure that you do a little investigating with the person's profile before you say yes to having them be a friend on your page. This is an interesting thing to look at. When you set up Facebook, you can go into the settings and you can decide, do I want them to send me an email every time somebody comments on something I put on Facebook? My answer to that is no, because I don't want to get emails from Facebook. I want it to be that like a store I shop at. I go to the store when I want to buy something. I go to Facebook when I want to interact. I don't want to get emails from them about anything. But you might. You might want to be notified that somebody's sent you an invitation to be their friend on Facebook. I don't like to see that, again, because I don't want my inbox fill up, but you might want to have that. So when you go into the settings, you get to choose what communication Facebook sends to you, and you also get to choose your privacy settings. And that means you can go in and you can decide, is what I'm putting on Facebook only going to be seen by my friends, or can their friends see it, or can anybody see it? I say all of that with the caveat that, and we'll talk about this again a little bit later, you don't have control over how somebody shares something of yours should you share it with them. In other words, forget about Facebook. If I sent Jim an email with a photograph of me on vacation in Hawaii, and I said, Jim, I really want you to see this photograph. What a great sunset. I don't have control over whether he forwards that photograph to somebody else, to be polite, I'm sure that he would ask my permission. But not everybody's polite, and not everybody's going to ask your permission. So even though your privacy settings may say, I only want to share what I'm putting on Facebook with the friends I've chosen to have on Facebook, you can't stop one of those friends from deciding to cross what I would consider as a privacy line and decide to share what you've put on, whether it's on Facebook or whether they just show it to a friend on their phone or print it and staple it to the telephone poles around the neighborhood. So I say all of that, so when you're choosing your privacy settings in Facebook, you have the caveat in your mind, you're asking Facebook to behave a certain way. It doesn't mean that everybody on Facebook is going to respect your decision, which is why we're going to talk a little bit later about being really selective about what you choose. But the privacy settings are there, and you should go in there and you should choose your privacy settings, ask somebody's advice if you're not sure about it, but understand it doesn't actually stop other people from sharing what you put on Facebook. So we want to be a little selective about that. We'll get to that in a minute. What I want to show you is this. This is a typical page on Facebook. And so you see it's sort of separated into three kind of columns, with the center column being the widest, and the column on the left is sort of your navigation bar, where there's a list of different things that you can visit on Facebook. And the one on the right, honestly, I completely ignore it, because the one on the right is usually advertisements or things that I'm not that interested in seeing. So I just kind of ignore that whole section on the right. Down the center is the news feed. And so down the center is where what you choose to share on Facebook, or everybody that you're following on Facebook, every friend that you have on Facebook, if they put something there, it's going to appear on that center section as a news feed. And that means it's like a long running, goes on sort of forever. You can scroll through it, a long running list of what people have chosen to share. So this is, Sherry Slayton is my sister-in-law. And so she chose to do a post up there thanking Richard Oliver for something that he did for her. And then people responded below that. The important part of this that I want you to see is what I circled on the screen. On the left-hand side, it says newsfeed, and I circled it with red because that's where you can choose whether your newsfeed is going to have what they consider to be the top stories at the top, and they diminish as it goes down, or whether it's chronological. So if you clicked on that down arrow next to newsfeed, what would come up is this choice of clicking on either top stories or most recent. So let me go back to that again. You're looking at the screen on Facebook, and you want to control whether you're seeing the most popular stories. That's what they mean by top stories, the stories that are getting the most response. So people have responded to the photograph or the website or the article or whatever it is. Those are the top stories. Or whether it's the most recent stories. I personally, when I look at Facebook, I don't really care what are the top stories. I want to see it in chronological order. That's my choice. But you can have whichever order you want to do it, and then you can change back and forth. You could look at the most recent posts on Facebook, and then you could say, oh, I wonder what are the top things? What are trending right now? And click on top stories and see how it changes. This same feature is true on your cell phone. It isn't just on the website. On your cell phone, you can go to most recent articles on Facebook as well. Let me show you another, for those of you that have Facebook and those of you who might be signing up, I just want to show you how you can manage what's on Facebook. So this is a post that I put on Facebook about not texting and driving. My sister was hit by somebody who was texting while they were driving, so it's a very personal issue for me. She's fine, but it still was a bother. So I put up a post about not texting and driving. What it actually is, it's an article that I found online that I wanted to share. So I shared the article, and then above it, I put my note that says, just stop doing it, don't text and drive. If after I posted that article and what I wrote, I suddenly wanted to change it because I made a typo, which I loathe having typos on my stuff, or I want to delete it because I had remorse afterwards, whatever it is, you have the option to change it if you click on the left arrow. And this is very subtle. When you look at Facebook, you might not find it right away. It's a very subtle kind of gray, not black, arrow that points down. When you click on that, a drop menu opens up, and that drop menu gives you a series of options for what you can do to the post that you just wrote. So you could delete it if you wanted to, you could change the date on it, you could add a location, there are all these different things that you can do, but this is a menu specific for the person who actually wrote the post. So that's for you to have that option, and I think probably if you didn't know about this, you're going to appreciate it, because there's nothing worse than going back and thinking, oh, geez, it's spell checked and I didn't type that word right or whatever, and then you can go back and clean it up. The next slide we're going to look at is a slide. This post that we're looking at is not from me. This is from Save Gansevoort. It's a street near where I live, and it's an old kind of neighborhood, and they're trying to make sure that the architecture there remains intact, is landmarked. And so this is a post from the organization Save Gansevoort. So it's not my post. I can't make changes to that post. I can't correct their spelling. I can't change the photograph because it's not what I put up. But I do have a choice about how I can handle that post. And again, it's that little arrow down on the right-hand side. When I click on that, even though I can't change the post, I could choose to unfollow the page or the person. I could choose to hide it so I don't see it on my newsfeed, on my timeline there, and then perhaps it will also continue to filter out other posts like that. So this little arrow is empowering for you should you have, and this can happen. I sort of think social media is not any different than being at a dinner party. Sometimes you're sitting at a dinner party and the person on your right-hand side is fascinating. You're so glad you met them. Everything they say is interesting. You hope you get to meet them again. And the person over here, well, you don't want them to choke on a chicken bone, but if they stop talking to you, your night might get a little bit better. There's no reason why the word social in social media speaks to that exact same event. If you choose to get onto Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and you have this group of people that you're sharing information with, you'll suddenly discover some of them are really interesting and have looked up great articles or are sharing really beautiful or interesting or funny photographs. And some of them, for whatever reason, you kind of were interested in them in real life, but on Facebook, all they do is show you pictures of their cats doing somersaults, or all they do is mope around in the morning about how hard it is to wake up, or all they do is put up political things. Whatever it is, it could be that you've decided to say yes to letting somebody be your friend on Facebook, and then you realize that their posts are kind of tiresome for you. This is where you get to choose to unfollow them. That means disengaging from them so that you don't share information with them and they don't share information with you, or to hide them. And they are two different things. When you unfollow somebody and you actually disengage from them on Facebook, they don't get a notice that, oh, Abby Stokes just unfollowed me. They don't get some sort of a flare doesn't go up and they get insulted. But if they only have five friends and now one of them disappeared, they might be able to figure out who it was that disappeared. So if you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings by unfollowing them, should they be somebody that doesn't have 1,000 people that they're on Facebook with, rather than unfollow them, you could choose to hide their post. And that means you continue to be their friend on Facebook. They can see what you post. You can go to their page and look at their pictures if you want to. But their posts will no longer come up on this news feed because you're just tired of them and you don't want to see them anymore. They don't know that you hid them. So hiding somebody, hiding their posts is a secret way, a subtle, polite way to not see what they're sharing unless you want to go to their page and look at it. So that's food for thought for those of you who are already on Facebook who want to decide that you're sort of done with looking at somebody's things. So we talked earlier about how you can't control whether somebody shares your information. even if your privacy settings are very clear on the subject. And that's what I refer to as the front door test, is your best line of defense of how to deal with how do you protect yourself on Facebook from having somebody get information about you that you didn't want to have everybody know about. My first line of defense is don't share it, right? There are so many other ways that you can choose to share personal information. I use the filter of the front door test, which means if you wouldn't be comfortable having that information on the outside of the front door to your home, don't put it on Facebook. Because even though your privacy settings are very clear or you only have 10 friends, we can't control how they share your information. So an example is this. I know lots of people love to share photographs when they're on vacation. I live in New York City. So for me to put a photograph up on Facebook that says, oh, the first of 14 beautiful sunsets in Hawaii, I'll keep you posted. What I may as well do is put a sign on the outside of my apartment door that says, I'm gone for 14 days. Let yourself in. See what you like. Come back. Take more. I'm gone for 14 days. So from my point of view, I never put up vacation pictures until I'm done with the vacation. But I'm a paranoid New Yorker. That might not be the case for where you are, but you can see how conveying information on Facebook that feels sort of innocent. My mother always said, the time to break into somebody's house is when you see a wedding or a funeral announcement in the newspaper. She always said that was the worst idea possible because everybody knows that you're not there. You're off doing what you're doing with your family. So it's good to just say to yourself, before you get involved in an argument on Facebook, ask yourself, would you really put that on the outside of your home? Would you really want to have that photograph on the outside of the door to your home? Would you share that newspaper article on the outside of the door to your home? Because that's essentially what you're doing with Facebook, because we can't control how the information gets passed on. So that's not to scare you. That's to empower you so that you decide what it is that you want to share on Facebook and not have it be that somebody else is deciding to share things about you. Before I go on to Twitter and Instagram, I'll stop for just a moment and ask if there are any questions specific to Facebook that you guys have. And then Jim can either translate them for me, or I think you guys might have a microphone. I'm not sure which. Oh, great.
How many places do you have to go in Facebook to find all the stuff that they have about you?
And to about you?
Yeah, you know, if you're doing those privacy settings, I understand that, well, all of these companies are redoing that kind of thing, and we're thinking about it more and more, and it's getting to the point where I hear there are lots of different places on some of these websites that you have to make choices in order to take care of the problem.
I think I know what you're asking. You don't pay for Facebook, right? Facebook has to make money. And how they make money is they basically are selling your information, not your photographs. They're selling the information that is culled about what interests you. And that's part of what you agree to when you go onto Facebook. So if you liked something on Facebook or shared something on Facebook, that data about your activities on Facebook is part of what Facebook collects and sells to advertisers. So it has happened to me where I looked at a blue leather jacket on a totally different website, and all of a sudden, in the sidebar on Facebook, there's the jacket that I looked at. It was the weirdest, but this is, you know, this interconnectivity of the cookies on your computer, which are sort of warehousing some of your activity with Facebook. So I think the question that you were asking is how can you tell what they know about you? And the answer is they know whatever you've chosen to share. So when you are active on Facebook and you have an opinion, or whether it's liking something or sharing something or forwarding something, that all of that gets recorded. So if you want to have the smallest footprint you can have, you interact as little as possible. That's really the answer, which is a bummer, because obviously what you want to do if you're social networking is you want to interact. That's part of the nature of the beast. So I think there are two sort of mindsets for how to look at this. One is my sister, who wouldn't get an easy pass for her car because she thought that it meant the Big Brother would know where she was coming and going, because they'd be recording the tolls that she went through, and she won't bank online. Or me. And I figure I'm an open book. I don't share something like my social security number or where I'm going on vacation or when I'm going on vacation, but I kind of figure I'm a pretty opinionated person, so I'm going to be opinionated on my doorstep, I'm going to be opinionated at my office, and I'm going to be equally opinionated or whatever, or sharing on Facebook. So I'm comfortable. I definitely edit things and I don't share everything, but I sort of figure everything I do on Facebook is part of this public arena of gathering demographic information on people for marketers. And I submit to that. If it really bugs you that somebody is tracking you to say people between the age of 35 and 50 and this woman qualifies and this is what she clicked on, then don't go in the arena, because it is out of your control. It is not something you can stop. That is part of the relationship that you have with Facebook. That's part of what you sign off on, is that's how they're making their money, is selling the numbers game of what people are interested in. So I totally agree if somebody doesn't want to have that happen, so they don't want to be on Facebook. What I get confused by is when people get mad at Facebook, unless you didn't understand that was the relationship. But I'm telling you now, that's the relationship. So if that is offensive or frightening or invasive for somebody, you shouldn't get on Facebook, because you won't win that fight. Because by virtue of signing on to them, you have signed away. They're not supposed to take your photographs and go sell them, and they're not supposed to show them to other people. But as far as your traveling patterns and the demographics behind that, that is part and parcel of what they get to use. Did that help? It was a very long answer, and I'm not sure if that answered you.
Yes, it did. Thank you. I have two questions. One, I think, is part of what you just said. My son put a picture of myself and my grandson on Facebook, and I got a note back from somebody that said they tagged it and my name was on it. So, what does that mean?
Okay, that happened to me once. I was at a talk, actually, and I'm not a vain person, but it was a really unflattering picture of me that I didn't know anybody had taken. I didn't know it existed at all, except the person who posted it, and it was nice. They were being nice about the talk, but they tagged me, which means when they put the picture up on their page, and I was one of a couple of people in the picture, and I'm on Facebook, they literally put their mouse on my face, clicked, and typed in my name. And so it tagged me. So it ultimately appeared on my timeline. It connected me to my page. So when somebody commented on the picture, I was aware of it because it was now part of me, because they connected me by tagging my name on it. You can go and untag yourself from photographs that you appear in. So it doesn't take the picture off of Facebook, but your name is no longer associated with the picture. However, having said that, it sounds like a good empowering thing to do, but once your name has appeared on the picture, it's embedded in it somewhere in the land of Facebook. So you won't be tagged anymore for the general population, but I'm not sure you can actually erase that there's a connection somewhere in the archives to that. The best thing you can do, should somebody post a photograph of you that you don't want to have on Facebook, you can untag it if you just don't want to be tagged, but if you really don't want it on Facebook, the best thing you can do is one-on-one, call them, email them, text them, do a private message on Facebook and say, I'd rather not have that picture on Facebook if you don't mind. Since you're in it, I feel like you have the privilege, the right, to ask the person to take the picture off or to take you out, crop you out of the picture. But you can untag yourself if that's the very first step you want to do. Open up the picture, and along the bottom, there'll be a series of options for what you can do with that picture, and you can untag yourself there.
Thank you. The second question is, can anybody go in and guess that I have a Facebook page under my name and just put my name in and dot Facebook, and can they go to it?
Yes, so what will happen is this. If there's a search box on Facebook at the top where you can type in subjects, organizations' names, or people's names. And when you type in a person's name, you're going to see very few people have an individual name, even Abby Stokes, which I think is sort of an unusual name. It's not true. There are dozens of us on Facebook. Who knew? So what will happen is somebody types in your name, and then they're going to see the long list of everybody else who's sharing your name. And most people on Facebook have a photograph that identifies them. You know, that's true of most people. They have a picture there, not all. They would start to click through each of those names if they were specifically looking for you until they find you. This is where your privacy settings matter. Some people on Facebook have chosen that when you click on you, a stranger, not somebody who they've said you can be my friend on Facebook, that anybody can see what they've put on Facebook. Some people have chosen that. That means you get to see every picture they put up, every post they put up, and you don't know them at all. And they haven't approved of you specifically. They've just said, generally, I'll let anybody see it. You have a choice, however, to choose that, or you could choose that only your chosen friends, the people that you've said yes to on Facebook, that only they can see what you're putting on Facebook. Or you can have it be that some people can see part of what's on Facebook. Your photographs are private, but what you say about yourself, if you put in your college or your age or your hometown, that they can see that information. So that's where the privacy settings matter, that you get specific, because that's often kind of the first line of defense for who gets to see you on Facebook. But if you don't set your privacy settings at all, and somebody's looking for you on Facebook, and you're on Facebook, and they click on you, they'd be able to see everything. So you want to be sure you set those privacy settings. Did that help?
One more. Are you ready? Yes, are you ready for another question? All right. This elemental question concerning Facebook. A couple of days ago, I received a message from halfway around the world from my wife, and she has photos and everything she's doing, and below that is a bunch of comments from her friends, our friends, saying, well, their comments anyway. Down at the bottom, there's a blank bubble, and it asks for my comments. So I typed in my comments, and I got through typing a short message. I looked it over, said, that's fine, and I looked everywhere for a button to send. Now, where is this button? Because I never did send it out. Thank you.
That's a very good question, and this is where you have to say design is the problem, because you're asking the most straightforward, simplest question ever asked, and the answer is there's no button. It's the enter or return key on your keyboard. So it means, like, this is where design could make my head explode. You'd think they would have put in somewhere a send button or an enter button or something. No. When you're typing a comment on Facebook and you hit the enter or the return key, you know, the same key that you do on your keyboard that brings you down a line, it doesn't bring you down a line on Facebook. It sends your comment, which drives me crazy because sometimes I want to break my comment up so that I can actually start a new line myself, you know, so it doesn't wrap around automatically. But that doesn't work because when you hit the enter key, your comment gets posted. So the next time you do a comment, type all you want, and then when you're done, don't look for the send button or anything like that. Instead, just hit the enter or return key on your keyboard, and it will then have been posted. But it's one of those moments where I always say to my students, if something isn't easy for you, it's not because you're doing something wrong. It's because they designed it wrong. It's the simplest thing for somebody to be looking for something that says send or post or something, but it's not there because it's not there. Okay, great. So let's talk. I want to get to some nitty-gritty overall about social media, but I do want to address a couple of other formats of social media that you might have heard about, whether you're using them or not. And so one of them is Twitter. And I don't want to linger too much on it because there's obviously not a huge amount of interest in the room for doing it, or at least not yet. Maybe you will after we talk. Twitter is a website, like Facebook is a website. So to set yourself up, you go to twitter.com, and exactly the same thing, you need to give Twitter an email address, and you need to give them a password. You need to establish a password with them. By the way, when it comes to this email address thing, it's why I have more than one email address. I have one email address that, like, Jim emailed me to that's my personal email address and my business email address. Then I have another email address that I use for shopping. So when they send me announcements that it's shipped or other advertisements or social media, those all go to my second email address. So if you only have one email address and it's really been inundated with junk mail, now might be a good time to open up a new, fresh email address that you're only going to give to friends and family, and keep that one that's getting all the junk as the secondary email address that you would use if you were signing up for Twitter or for Facebook. So you need to give Twitter or Facebook an email address and establish a password with them. But Twitter, just like Facebook, is also an app that you could use on your smartphone, and that's where most people look at it. Let me show you what Twitter looks like. So it's set up in very much the same way as Facebook. There are basically three columns that you're looking at. The left-hand column tends to be what's trending on Facebook, what's getting the most traffic. The center column is the news feed, very similar to Facebook. And usually that right-hand column is something that I'm not paying much attention to because that's where most of their advertising goes to. So it's very much the same as Facebook as far as how the communication flows. The big difference with Facebook and Twitter is Facebook is reciprocal. You ask me to be your friend, I say yes, you're my friend on Facebook, I'm your friend on Facebook, and we can both see what each other is posting. On Twitter, it's not the same. They're not friends on Twitter, they're followers on Twitter. And if you wanted to follow me on Twitter, it doesn't mean that I follow you on Twitter and vice versa. So it's not reciprocal, and you don't have to be a real person using your real name. That's not the foundation of Twitter. Facebook's foundation is it's trying to be kind of a social spider web. And so they want you to be, not that they succeed at this all the time, but they want people to be real people interacting. Twitter, I could use the handle Yellow Bird, and nobody would stop me. I could be anybody I want to be on Twitter. So those are the fundamental difference of the functionality as a person on Twitter. The other difference is that, you know, Twitter is thought to be a briefer form of communication, was limited to 180 characters. Now it's a little bit broader than that, and you can do photographs, which you couldn't do when it first started. There are the horns honking. So I look at Twitter as kind of the Monarch Notes. Do you remember Monarch Notes when you would be assigned a book at school and you didn't get a chance to read it, so you read the shorter version of it? On Twitter, you could follow celebrities if you wanted to. You could follow the people that write the op-eds that you like to read. You could follow somebody who shares your interests because they're into macrame. I follow people on Twitter who write articles that I should be reading about technology and about seniors. So for me, I use Twitter in a very specific way. I have chosen to follow on Twitter people that write people that I, you know, have followed in newspapers and magazines when we used to read them, people that write articles that I want to know when they've written another article. And so they tend to put that on Twitter. But people use it for all different kinds of things. And it's interesting, Twitter is a great place to go to hear what the latest, if something's happened in the world, often it'll be on Twitter before it's on a news channel because the news channels need to verify, rightfully so, what they're putting up. Twitter, it means you have to be discriminating about what you see on Twitter, but sometimes when it comes to, you know, I was on the Long Island Railroad the other day, I was waiting for a train, and it was very late coming. And I went onto Twitter and looked up their Twitter page, and I actually saw on Twitter what had delayed the train. They posted those things in real time very quickly. I couldn't have found that information anywhere else. It wasn't on their website. It was on their Twitter feed. So Twitter has a sense of, it's not urgency, but immediacy, that sometimes things are posted in very rapid fire on Twitter. But let's break it down a little bit more so you understand sort of how it functions. So here is, I've sort of taken what you see on the page and put it at the top half of the screen, and then at the bottom half is where I have typed a tweet as I would type it. And I'm going to break down the parts of that tweet. So this actually was something that I did. It was just like my talking to you. I was at a place called Senior Planet, which is a place here in New York City that's for older adults with technology. And I was doing a presentation there. And so I posted on Twitter, talking Twitter with folks at Senior Planet, dot, 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 hashtag tech fun. So let's break down those two parts that are not familiar to us in normal speak, the at part of it and the tech fun. So talking Twitter with the folks at Senior Planet, hashtag tech fun. The at symbol is a symbol that comes before somebody's name on Twitter, whether it's your actual name or whether it's the name that you've given yourself on Twitter because you've said Yellow Bird. In this case, Senior Planet has a Twitter page, and Senior Planet is an actual physical place that you go to. So when I tweeted talking Twitter with the folks at Senior Planet, in the same way the gentleman who asked the question got a notification about the photograph because he was tagged in it, when I put in at Senior Planet, I'm sending a message to Senior Planet on Twitter that I'm mentioning them in my post. And so they actually get notified that I mentioned them. So if you were on Twitter and you wanted to sort of hat tip somebody, give them a little nod and say, you know, thanks for the birthday party, or you did a great job at that lecture, or I just read your book and I love it, you would do at and whatever their name is, their handle. It always makes me think of when I was I think I was 12, and CB radios were still very popular, and my best friend and I, we had a CB radio at her house, and so we would talk to these truckers going by in Connecticut, and her handle, her at, was Kitty Litter, and my handle was at Terry Cloth. So whenever I see the at symbol on Twitter, I always think, oh, it's a handle like the CB radios. That's what that means. So when you, if you were on Twitter and you see that at symbol, that's designate somebody's name. The hashtag is different. The hashtag, or as we grew up, it's the pound sign or the number sign. You take words and you combine them together, so there are no spaces in a hashtag. There are actually no spaces in the handle either, in the name. So it's not Senior Space Planet. It's Senior Planet altogether. The hashtag is a way for different tweets that share a similar subject to be found. So if you were on Twitter, I think you can see if I look here, yes, at the top there it says search Twitter over on the right-hand side. It's a little box that says search Twitter. You could go in there and instead of searching for somebody's name on Twitter, you could search for a subject, like you're into antique cars. You could put hashtag antique cars, and what would happen is every tweet that has the hashtag antique cars would now come up on your feed. There would be tens of thousands of them. You wouldn't want to look at them all, but it would allow you to look at them and read them and be like, oh, well, I really like what this guy wrote about antique cars. I may follow him. Oh, well, I don't agree with him at all. I'm not going to follow that person. Oh, this woman has a really beautiful car. I've loved that car. I may follow her. So the hashtag that gets used is a way to convey to people what some of the key ideas are inside the tweet that you did. So I did the words tech fun. So it meant that if anybody was getting onto Twitter and was wanting to talk about tech fun, they would find my tweet. And hashtags can be sort of, you know, sometimes there are several words strung together. But that sort of breaks down, I know it's a teeny tasting, but that breaks down for you the difference between Twitter and Facebook, what a hashtag is, and what that at symbol is. I don't know if you'll ever use Twitter, and here's the thing about all of social networking. Is your life going to suffer by not using it at all? And the answer is your life is not going to suffer at all by not using it. Could your life be enhanced by using it, especially if you were homebound or you had family and friends who were very far away and being able to see their pictures on Facebook would keep you connected? or you wanted regular information from organizations that you're interested in, and Twitter might keep you connected that way. There are a lot of benefits, but generally I would say that it needs to be that it's something that you're interested in and that benefits you. And if it benefits your daughter or your grandson or your neighbor, it doesn't mean it's going to benefit you. So it's really a personal choice. The best thing you can do is sit down beside somebody who has a Twitter account, somebody who's going to go nice and slow and not just talk so fast you can't understand it, and show you what they use it for. And just ask yourself, geez, you know, change the interest, and would it be something that would be beneficial for me? And it might, honestly, I don't use Twitter a lot. I did for a while. Like, if somebody's at a conference, they'll actually take the hashtag for the conference, let's say it's a book fair, and they'll tweet about what's happening there, and that was very helpful and interesting to me. But by and large, I don't use Twitter a lot. But some people really love it. So there's an introduction. Are there any questions about Twitter before I go on to Instagram? Okay. So let's just go over Instagram fairly quickly just to let you see what it is. So Instagram, again, just like Twitter and Facebook, it's a website. So you can sign on by going to Instagram.com. It's also an app, and that's how most people look at it on their phone. What makes Instagram so different is it plays off of a picture's worth a thousand words. People don't talk a lot on Instagram. What they do is they convey what they want to share in photographic form. And so for me, it's so much easier than having to filter through all this talk. So I actually love Instagram for that reason. So here it is. This is what the app looks like on the left-hand side. And this is what an Instagram picture is. It's my goddaughter's friend with her dog and an empty bottle of wine. I do not believe that he drank the wine. But so that's kind of, you know, right there, right away, it's a relief, it's a chuckle, it's fun, she's sharing a great idea, you know, Instagram, and you could share much more philosophical ideas or much more poignant ideas, but Instagram is actually really fun on your phone because you just flick along, and people who want to share images, who, again, on Instagram, it's more like Twitter than it is Facebook, because you don't need to be a real person on Instagram. They don't really care what your name is on Instagram. But you do, it is reciprocal. So Katie Pilot, if I put some, I very rarely post on Instagram. I just like to look at it. But if I put something up on Instagram, Katie Pilot would see what I put up and I see what she puts up. So you can also block people on Instagram if you want to. But it's one of those places where it's just fun for pictures. So here's an example. This is an image of my two goddaughters when they were out traveling, and my goddaughter put it up, and at the bottom, what's circled in red is that this picture got 29 likes. And how you like a picture on Instagram, it's very simple. You just click on the heart, and it counts as a like. It's a very simple, easy, there's not a whole lot of communicating. You can choose to comment below the picture if you want to, and then you would click on comment and you would type in whatever comment you want to do. And some people do that, but again, it's usually very abbreviated. So it's very low text and very high visual. So if you're a visual person and you want to keep in touch with your grandkids, you might ask them if they're using Instagram, and I bet they are. And you could just see their pictures on Instagram, and it really does say a lot what those pictures have to say without all the words. The other thing that's actually really fun with Instagram is you're able to take images that you have on your phone, and when you bring them into Instagram, you can actually use filters on them, and you can adjust the pictures. There are many different ways you can do that on a smartphone, but on Instagram, it's just fun. It's part of the app, is that you can bring in a picture, and you can sort of alter it and make it look a little crisper, or make it black and white, or make it in sepia tones, you know, tones. But it's just a fun part of it that I actually like using the filters. So that's pretty much Instagram. The last thing I want to just, is there any questions about Instagram before I go on? I'm seeing our time is ticking away. Okay, so the last social media that I want to talk to you is, sure, absolutely.
How do you address the Instagram or determine whose pictures you want to watch?
Oh, so, okay, when you go to Instagram, you're going to have a choice about who you follow on Instagram. So you could search for somebody's name, or, you know, if somebody's told you what they're using as their name on Instagram, you just go along, you search for them, and then once you find them, you're able to click on the word follow. And that's how you ultimately, like, I follow the New York Times on Instagram, I follow my goddaughters on Instagram. You know, if there's somebody you want to follow on Instagram, you can search for their name, or they can tell you what it is if it's not their actual name. And then you just have to follow them on Instagram. Did that answer your question? Oh, good. Any others? Okay. So the last social media, it's so interesting to me. It's the least sexy, but it's the most helpful, and not a lot of people talk about it anymore. Definitely never hits the headlines the way Facebook or Twitter or Instagram does. It's LinkedIn. If you know somebody who is seeking employment, or somebody who is seeking an employee, or somebody who wants to just network because of their job, LinkedIn is the place to do it. LinkedIn is the largest professional social media website. So, from my point of view, it's sort of like the quiet kid in the corner who's going to be very successful and helpful. Pay attention to that quiet kid in the corner, because if you know somebody who's looking for a job, LinkedIn is where you can post your resume, people can give you references, you can do a lot of networking, and it is the same thing as Facebook in that it's reciprocal. So when you make a connection on LinkedIn, they can see what you put on LinkedIn, and I, in turn, can see what they put on LinkedIn. But the truth is, with LinkedIn, I don't ever post things. I just use it as a networking source. So, you know, between publishing and technology, you know, I've got a lot of people in LinkedIn that I'm connected with. So if I suddenly wanted to do a speaking tour in Texas, because I have a new book, which I don't, but let's say I do, I might go onto LinkedIn and find those people who are from Texas in LinkedIn and put out feelers saying, do you have an idea where I could speak, or I'm going to be speaking here, come see me. So LinkedIn is really the most practical and productive social media website that you can go to. So if you know somebody who's looking for a job, who's just got out of college, try to inspire them to create a LinkedIn page, because it will help them get a job. And a lot of employment agencies now, or employers, don't really want to receive the resume even by email. They'd rather ask if you have a LinkedIn account, and they'll take a look at you on LinkedIn. So don't overlook that if you know somebody who's seeking employment. Any questions about LinkedIn? Okay, so let's get to the nitty-gritty here of the problems that we have to overcome when it comes to social networking. Now, son, do you know what you did wrong? Yes, sir. I shared something on Facebook without checking facts and encouraged bull to propagate, leading to the dumbing down of humanity. Here we have a problem. And I don't care if your politics are red, if they're blue, if they're purple. We have a problem with the conveyance of information on social media and people reading something and believing because it's in writing, or because it's on the face of an actor that they like, or George Washington, that they're believing that George Washington said it. It's very hard for us to not believe what we read, because we all grew up in an arena where newspapers, and this is still true of newspapers source their materials, right? Remember, we used to read newspaper articles, and then they became blogs. And then there was this hard moment of realizing nobody's vetting blogs. Anybody can have one. So you have to start being your own filter for, do I believe that sticking a pin in my index finger every third Tuesday is going to stop diabetes? I read that on a website, right? No, of course my brain is telling me no, but I'm reading it on a website. So the one advantage I will say of those of us over 50 years old, you know, 60, 70, 80, is that we have a lot of life experience. And I think we're better at listening to that flag, that voice in our head that's like, really? Listen to the really? And use that as a filter. When you're on Facebook, and a post comes up, whatever it is, if it seems unlikely to you, it probably is unlikely. But there are some resources you have for checking facts and figures. I used to say this when people would talk about pop-up ads. When I'm sitting at home watching my television set, and an advertisement comes on the TV, and it says, you need to lose 10 pounds. And I look down and I go, of course I need to lose 10 pounds. But my TV set doesn't know that. They know that most people need to lose 10 pounds. And so they've created an advertisement playing off of what most people probably know or need to do. And so I watch that advertisement, and then I go to my kitchen, and I get a bag of potato chips, and I come back and I eat the potato chips because I know they're not actually watching me, right? When things pop up on your computer screen, you need to be just as discriminating and empowered. That's really what it is. It's empowerment. You're empowered to say, something just popped up on my screen on my computer that tells me that my computer doesn't have enough memory, or my computer isn't secure enough, or I need to update it, or on Facebook, want to find out who's looking at you? You know, it's often things about body parts getting bigger or smaller, or privacy things that really get our attention. You know, they know what they're doing. And I will see these things pop up on Facebook, and I think, it's an advertisement of some kind. Don't click on it, because they're promising some information, some gossipy thing, and I'm like, that's not really what they mean. What happens now, for good or for bad, is that people pass on information for whatever their interests are, whether it's political or otherwise, that are just not based in fact. And so when I see something pop up on the screen that seems absolutely absurd, I feel a need, because of how I make my living, to actually search for whether or not that post is true. So there are a couple of ways for you to do that. The first thing is, when you look at this screen that I've showed you, down there circled in red is the source for the information that I'm looking at. And that source right now, it says Channel 4 News, if you can't see it. So when you see something posted on Facebook that's an article of some kind or a video, underneath it on the left, it will tell you what the source is. And the next slide I'm going to show you is going to start to give you guidelines about what sources we can rely upon and what sources are leaning left or leaning right or just plain scandalously, you know, untrue. The other choice you have before you look at that source is to go to one of these two completely bipartisan, fact-based websites and look up what it says. You know, there was one the other day that came up, and it was something about, you know, this little girl in a hospital, and you give a dollar and whatever. And I went on to Snopes.com, and I took the keywords from this thing, that this post that had come up, and I searched for those keywords, only to find that Snopes said this has been a hoax that's been going around for a long time. It's like chain letters. You know what I mean? Like chain letters, some people automatically fall for them and pass them on. I can't stand them. I never pass them on. But sometimes we need to prove whether or not they're true. And Snopes.com or FactCheck.org are two websites that I highly recommend, that should you see something before you pass it on, be your own filter. Should you see something before you pass it on, look it up on those two sites and see if they say that it is true or it is not true. If you don't find it there, go and Google it and see if you see it mentioned in a reputable source for news before you pass it on. And that brings up this next slide, and we're almost at the end here for you guys. This next slide is, this has been, and I can give you the source of it, it's at the bottom. This is a source for what news is neutral, what news skews liberal, what news skews conservative, what contains factual information, and down at the bottom, what contains inaccurate and fabricated information. And what I think is fascinating about this chart is, regardless of your politics, it's a pretty even-handed, you know, it's funny how it sort of goes down in a pyramid, where right at the top is where we've got, you know, the reputable sources, and some skew liberal or conservative, right at the top there, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. But as we go down and they get less and less factual, there are just as many on the right side as there are on the left side. So it's important that this isn't weighed in some way against or for one view or another view. It's pretty evenly drawing it. It's very important, and I can share this with you guys. I can send it to Jim and then he can send it on for you to make a note of these. So like right at the very bottom on the right and right at the very bottom on the left, it says, Patriobotics and InfoWars. So right now those are marked as the absolute least factually based, completely like hysterical, both right and left. So what I would do is, I'm going to bring you back to this other slide. If I was looking at an article on Facebook and down at the bottom on the left, it either had Patriobotics or InfoWars. Those are the two examples here. If it had that circled in red, you know, if it was in that position that's now circled in red, I would not take what I was seeing as fact. I wouldn't pass it on, and I might even Snopes it and then put the link in Snopes underneath it in the comments to let the person who posted it, who I do know, who did it not out of malice perhaps, but because they believed it. I'm often the person who puts down the Snopes thing and say, just so you know, you're passing on something that isn't true or that isn't completely true, because there's sometimes, you know, there's a gray area in there. So this slide to me was so helpful, because I started to really make a note, and this just got updated in February of this year because it has changed around. I got to make a mental note of what sources I was going to pay attention to and what sources I wasn't going to pay attention to. So I will make sure that Jim gets this for anybody who wants to see it, but it's a very, very helpful source. And then to remember to do Snopes or factcheck.org to go and sort of fortify if you're really suspicious, and this will lead you to what you should be suspicious about, then you can go and actually factually find it out and pass on what's factual and what's not. Before we say goodbye to each other, because I know we're running out of time, I just want to pitch my website just because that's what I'm supposed to do, which is askabbystokes.com. Everything on there is free. There are, I think, 16 videos that walk you through lots of different things that might be of interest to you. You can join my newsletter if you want, but I haven't written in a long time, so don't do that. And I'm just going to pick the book and say, if you haven't seen it, go to your library, take it out. It's now 3 years old, so parts of it are a little bit out of date, but the bulk of it is not. If you're the dominant computer user in your home, buy this for your spouse, give it to them, and leave when they're on the computer, and I'll help them learn how to use the computer, because by that, I will save your marriage. So now I will take a breath and see if there are any last questions before you guys go on to your election.
You mentioned, sign up for Friends, or you like this thing. What's the purpose of that? I usually always say I like it so that, you know, I get brownie points, but...
So I'm sorry, I don't understand the question?
I'm trying to think of the phrase that when people say, ask you to like their page or their whatever.
Right.
What is the point of them?
It's a popularity contest. You know, it's the same thing as getting voted prom queen. So the businesses that want you to like their page, I mean, that is, you know, I don't agree with it. I don't really care about the numbers count, but fair enough. If you have a business, the more people that like it, give it more legitimacy. So if somebody has a nonprofit or it's your local library and they say, please like my page, it's just to have the numbers go up, because the higher the numbers, the more legitimate their site is. And it does mean that if you like them, the next time they post something, it'll appear on your timeline, your news feed, and one of your friends might see it there. So it's like a spider web, or it's like a drop in a pool. It ripples. And so the more people that like a page, the farther and farther it ripples out from its point of origin. So they're just trying to market themselves.
Okay, thank you very much, Abby. Can everyone give her a round of applause?
Thank you.